WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
In the early 70s, Barbara Garson interviewed hundreds of factory workers about the little games they played to keep from going crazy on the job. That was the basis of her book, All the Livelong Day. The workplace has changed since then. Many factories have closed down. Now computers are altering working life on jobs ranging from fast food fry cook to stockbroker. Garson's new book is about how computers are transforming the office of the future into the factory of the past. I asked her to explain the book's title, The Electronic Sweatshop.
Those kinds of white-collar jobs that are monitored, where the computer controls you. And I had thought when I started that the electronic sweatshop was in back offices of the kind that I had worked in. And I find that it moves upscale, if you will, or up the career ladder, so that even a top stockbroker, a big Wall Street broker, will find that his job is so monitored that the company can pull out information about what he's doing every minute of the day.
I learned through your book that when you call an airline to make your reservations,
yeah,
that those calls are have become standardized calls, that there's a way of behaving for the person taking your call.
Yes, what's happening is the same thing that happened to industrial work a couple of centuries ago. Take a craftsman's job, someone who knew what he should do next, and break the work down into little pieces. Find out what he does, break it down into little pieces, and give him back as a sort of an assembly line task. Well, they've taken a human conversation that should last about 2.5 minutes, according to the airlines, and broken it down into more than a dozen parts. And the clerk you're talking with is graded for more than a dozen things while he's on the air with you. But that's why when you get off the phone and you say, "God, I might as well be talking to an idiot," or "I might as well be talking to a machine," chances are you soon will be.
How are the calls standardized? For instance, in airline reservations, what is it broken down to, and how is it supposed to proceed?
There's different ways. First, there's the numerical things he's graded on. He's graded on the total amount of time, the AHU, the after hang-up time, which is the time it takes him to enter your data after he hangs up, which is 17 seconds in Canada and 13 seconds at American Airlines. He's graded on not only the number of reservations he made, but the number of people who flew under his sign. It sounds like astrology, but the number who he finally booked. And then each conversation has its sections. He has an opening. He has a close. He's graded for things like use of name, like he's supposed to say, "Well, Miss Garson, would you like to fly on the 10 o'clock or the 4 o'clock?" And he's graded on all those things, and you're trying to talk to him like a human being and say, "Well, I don't know, I'll have to call back my mother." And he's saying, "Well, would you like to take the 10 o'clock or the 4 o'clock?" And you wonder why he's such a jerk.
Now, I recently made airline reservations, and I thought, gosh, they're not really hearing me, because I'm not really ready to book. All I need now is information, and they keep booking me in. Like, what's what's going wrong?
Well, and the funny thing is, I was at American Airlines at a point when they'd done a survey and they found that their reservation agents were too pushy, were viewed as too pushy. So I thought, aha, they were retraining them. They'll just let them handle it how they want it, you know, let 100 flowers bloom. Well, no, they now recreated a less pushy conversation. I said, why don't you let them do it the way they wanted? But these electronic sweatshops, from airline reservation up to the conversations that that stockbrokers should have, the management goal is to pre-plan everything and to leave as few decisions to the person as possible.
How are phone calls and conversations monitored?
By two ways, and I'm glad you asked that, because most of the people that I've talked to so far are more offended by the idea of listening in. You know, eavesdropping, big brother, that has a kind of a splashy sound. But the kind of electronic monitoring that really worries me sounds less worrisome at first. I was working on a data entry clerk, and it didn't seem to be any supervisors in the office. And somebody called me aside after a couple of nights. I couldn't understand why none of the women were talking and gossiping together. And somebody calls me aside and says, as a matter of fact, called me down 4 flights, and he pressed a few, like, cords from his machine, and he said, gee, your keystroke count fell to under 9,000 an hour after dinner two nights in a row. Now, that kind of monitoring, that he could tell every second that I stopped to scratch my nose, I have a great deal of difficulty getting liberal people who are worried about the monitoring of their calls, or who are worried about the collection of data about their credit ratings or their doctors. They say to me, well, but that's not privacy. They don't understand the pressure you're under when the motions of your hands and almost the motions of your brains are continuously recorded.
You bring up an interesting paradox in your book. Many of us thought that when word processors entered the workplace, that secretaries would be freed up to do more diverse work because they wouldn't have to be retyping things. They could fix errors very easily through the word processor and just print it out.
I love my word processor at home.
But what you found was that, in fact, for a lot of secretaries, they've been put into secretarial pools with word processors, and they just can't do anything except type all day.
Well, when IBM first started selling, they didn't have PCs, when they were selling these big word processors, IBM was trying to teach the companies that it sold to that they had to break the one-to-one relationship between secretary and boss. In other words, rather than just put the word processor on the secretary's desk and she'll save a good deal of time retyping, IBM suggested that, how do you know what the boss and secretary are doing with that saved time? If you, on the other hand, put them in pools, then you can begin to start time studying not only the secretary, but the manager. And that, by the way, was the key. Both IBM and Xerox acknowledged to me that cutting middle management time and beginning to time study middle management was a more important goal than time studying the secretary.
Do you think that unions today are addressing the kinds of issues that you bring up in your new book?
Oh, no. I'm sorry to say that. They're so beleaguered, they can barely keep up with it. I had to go to Canada, really, to do the Canadian Airlines story, to get a union that was able to explain to its members the difference between, you know, monitoring statistically and this individual monitoring.
After writing The Electronic Sweatshop, are you behaving any differently as a consumer? And here's what I'm thinking. I, for instance, when I call airline reservations, I really want to get as much information as I can and, try to be friendly since I'm asking for so much information because I want to get all the flights and what all the discounts are. Now it dawns on me I might be hurting that person's career because I'm slowing them down and they might be held accountable for how long it's taking me to book my airline reservation.
I feel about it, and I guess I'm always torn between whether the best thing to do is to put in a human word that shows I understand but slows them down, but gives a little break to the day, or whether the best thing is to move along at the pace of the person who's got a computer in front of him and saying something like, is that a business or a residential? And you say, well, I don't know, my father died. You're trying to change an insurance policy. My father died, and I was on the store in the house, and I don't know. And you know that that person cannot proceed until they answer A or B. It's like, this is what kills me. I talk to these people. They are, you know, people are terrific. People are funny. The book would be very boring if I was writing about the systems instead of the people. And then the management's goal is to pre-think it, to assume everything that they can possibly know and get it and tell people exactly how to do their business in advance. And it just takes away all the advantage you get out of using, if you will, a human being.
Yeah, well, you know, with all this monitoring and standardization, it's almost as if there's a level of paranoia behind it. If I don't watch every move they make, if I don't count every stroke that they input, maybe they'll get away with something.
You know, it's interesting that you should say that, because the management, they believe in class war much more than the workers. They assume that nobody wants to do a good job and everybody's trying to get away with everything. For the most part, the managers were a lot more class conscious or had a class war sense of control that the workers didn't.
Barbara, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Barbara Garson's new book, The Electronic Sweatshop, is published by Simon & Schuster. She spoke to us from station KQED in San Francisco. This is Fresh Air.